that knocked upon my door and said that she had come to stay. And though I would not welcome her, but bade her go away, she entered in. And like my own shade, she followed after me. And from her stabbing, stinging sword, no moment was I free. Whether it comes through intended persecution or through more random trials, there are troubles that won't go away. David said, many are the afflictions of the righteous. Job said, man's days are short-lived and full of turmoil. Paul said, we are perplexed and persecuted. We are knocked down. In fact, if we trace the journeys of Paul in the first century, it would be like tracing the path of a wounded deer running from the hunter. One bloody mark after another. And Peter said, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you. The Bible is replete with illustrations of the reality of hurt and trouble. The drum of man beats out the pulse of pain. A jeweler gives as one of the surest tests of a true diamond the water test. An imitation stone is not as brilliant as the genuine. Sometimes you can't tell by looking. But the genuine stone sparkles brightly, even brilliantly, even though underwater, while the imitation is practically extinguished as to its sparkle. Many people who are confident of their faith, when they find themselves under the water of trouble and sorrow, find that their faith does not show forth as brilliantly as they had hoped. But put true, solid faith under that water, and it shines forth as brilliantly as ever. G.K. Chesterton said, I believe in getting into hot water. I think it keeps you clean. There is in our lives a need for testing. Sometimes there's no better test than hot water. The water of sorrow and trials. How we handle trouble is an indication of our faith. And we experience trouble constantly. It seems like it's never far away. Job said, man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upward. Man that is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. David said, be not far from me, for trouble is near. The preacher said, therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Paul said, if you get married, you'll have trouble in the flesh, because you have trouble being you, and when you're trying to be you with somebody else who's trying to be them, there'll be trouble. Jesus said, in this world you shall have tribulation. And he himself was troubled in spirit. John 13:21. Paul said he was troubled on every side. 2 Corinthians 4:8. So we expect trouble. You're not the only one experiencing it. We all do. And if your faith is no good for trouble, it's no good. If it's only good when you don't need it, you don't need it. If my faith is only good when all is well, it's not well. I'd like to spend some time with you this morning in the first chapter of the book of James, the first few verses there. In James chapter 1, verse 2, it talks about various trials, divers temptations. The word there meaning variegated, multicolored. The same expression is used for polka dotted. And it emphasizes the diversity of trouble rather than just the number of them. All the shades, sizes, and varieties of trouble. And James says, when, not if. When you fall into various trials, because they're as inevitable as death and taxes. I heard a story, you may have heard it too, about a man who was in New York City on his way home on a subway. Did you hear this story? He's on his way home on the subway, and he was prone to motion sickness to begin with, but he'd had a big lunch, and he'd already worked all afternoon with kind of an upset stomach. He was jammed into this subway as the last person able to get on, and the door was closed. He was looking out the window there with everything flying by at 90 miles an hour. And the longer he stood there, the sicker he got, until they finally came to a stop that was not his place to get off, but there was another man waiting on the platform at the head of the line waiting to get on. And the door opened, and out came the first man's lunch all over the first man in line. And then the door closed and the train went right on. And the man on the platform who was suddenly covered with the first man's lunch turned to the man in back of him and said, "Why me?" Isn't that the way life sometimes seems? James says trials are inevitable. If the subway door doesn't open on you today, it will open on you soon. This is the life we live. So we need to be ready for this and understand that trials have a purpose. In verse 3, James says that the trying of your faith works patience or endurance. There are specific tests that stretch us spiritually. Trials teach us how to hang in there when it seems like there's no good answer. Many people get into the habit of taking tests as a personal offense. But if we can look at them as servants to teach us something, we'll be way ahead. Our faith is tested like a rubber band by stretching. And as we're stretched, we get a little more flexible. We give a little where we didn't before. And by, the Lord hopes we will be patient under the load. In verse 3, he talks about testing, the trying of your faith. The word there is dokimos, meaning approved. Many of the jugs and pots that the archaeologists have dug up are marked dokimos, expressing the approval of a vessel that went through the furnace without cracking. The vessels that cracked in the furnace were placed on the budget shelf and sold for much less. But those that were valuable were those that were approved through the furnace. A swimming instructor works all summer long with the children. And then the day of testing comes. And the instructor puts the child in the water, not hoping to see the child sink, but hoping to see this child swim successfully. But you've got to put them in the water as a test to see what's going to happen. So verse 4 says, let patience, let endurance have her perfect result. Like stacking up a row of dominoes. You push the first one over and they all fall. The finger of testing pushes the first domino down. And when endurance goes down, it bumps onto the beginning of maturity. And maturity stays on course. You become a person of great character. The great Christian characters that you and I have known are people who have learned how to handle life in the furnace. The mother who is able to say, "The Lord giveth, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." The father who comes home having done his very best, but having lost his job anyway, and says to his family, "Let's thank God for this opportunity to trust Him." The teenager who says, "I will not give up my principles, even though it seems like right now I'm not liked by anybody." This marvelous quality of maturity emerges when we are patient under the load. So we can think of troubles not as an enemy, but as a servant for patience and ultimately for character development unto maturity. How can I rise above my situation? I don't want to quit. I don't want to drop out. I don't want to stop short. What will help me handle troubling circumstances? How can I become that winner in verse 12 of James 1? Who happily receives the crown of life. When I go through a trial, I need to examine how I react to that trial and what that reaction says about my faith and my love for God, as also evidenced in verse 12. Loving God is the key to enduring the trials of life. Them that love God is a title for Christians, Romans 8:28. All things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. If a man in his supposed love for God doesn't have any real regard for God except where his own personal happiness is concerned, if a person delights in God not for what God is, but for what God is to him, in that kind of sentiment, there isn't any solid virtue. There's a great love of self, but not a great love of God. When God Himself becomes the object of devout and delighted contemplation, the views of the lover of God are in great measure completely diverted from self. The soul cleaves to God, and in the fervor of this affection, he can say, like David did, "Whom have I in heaven but thee?" As the hart pants after the water brooks, so my soul pants after thee, O God. The bond that ties us to God is love, but it's not just a superficial affection. It's not just a sentiment that is basically selfish. Not something that says, as long as I get what I'm after, I'll stick around. But it's a bond of true love that can endure any trial that this world or the flesh or the devil can throw at us. Who do you love more than you love God? Are you pleased with the character of God? Do you love every part of it? Do you love His holiness as well as His grace? Do you love His justice as well as His mercy? In whose character do you behold more beauty than in the character of God? To whom are you more grateful than you are to God? Supreme love to God is decisive evidence of facing the right direction. How can we gain the most from trials? James here gives three key means to persevering through and rising above and gaining the most and winning the victory. The first thing is a joyous attitude, and this is imperative. A joyous attitude, verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy. To count there means to consider. It means to evaluate. To discipline yourself to do it. Make a conscious commitment to do it. Like the Apostle Paul said, I have learned. It didn't come naturally. I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. And he said that just after he said, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. And he said it while he was a prisoner. Paul cultivated that contentment. It didn't happen by accident. When my grandparents were ready to move off the farm just up north of Braemar years ago, they lived there on that farm for a long, long time. They were moving into town, into a little apartment, and people were saying, oh, they're not going to like that. Somebody came to my grandmother, who was really my great aunt, but that's another story. Said to her, you think you're going to like it? She said, we're going with the intention of liking it. Oh, that means a lot. It's a joyous attitude. Paul cultivated that. It didn't happen by accident. Count it all joy when you fall. You fall into various trials. This means it's unplanned. It means it's surprising when these things happen. The individual things that happen to us are surprising. Same word is used when Paul's ship fell into a place between two seas late in the book of Acts. It's an inadvertent occurrence. Count it all joy when you fall into various trials. There's no way out because they surprise you. They surround you and surprise you. Jesus didn't seek trouble, but He accepted it when it came. Who, for the joy that was set before Him, that's why He did it, Hebrews 12:2. For the joy that was set before Him, He endured the cross, despising the shame. He looked beyond the trial to the joy to be realized after the trial. In other words, to what the enduring of that trial would accomplish. And in verses 10 and 11 of Hebrews 12, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, there's the key word there, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. So you count it a privilege to have your faith tested. You anticipate the perfecting work that can come through that trial. And you learn to cultivate that right attitude. After you have suffered a while, Peter said, 1 Peter 5, verse 10, after you have suffered a while, you learn to cultivate that right attitude. Jesus said that His disciples shouldn't expect anything different than what He Himself endured. If they hated Me, they'll hate you. If they persecuted Me, they'll persecute you, He said. So you look beyond the trial to the joy that will come after you have passed the test. And notice here that the attitude is not one of partial joy. James says all joy. All joy. Because you've come to a settled conviction that you're going to face trials with the right attitude. Have you noticed that in your trials you are more aware of God? Have you noticed that in your trials prayer increases, maybe study increases? When Paul was in jail, he said, "I do rejoice and I will rejoice." Job said, "When God has tested me, I shall come forth as gold," referring to the annealing process of purifying gold, a little at a time. "Though He slay me, yet will I trust Him." And his wife was in the wings saying, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" But Job is rejoicing. Romans 8:18, "The sufferings of this present time are not even worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." It's like the guy who hit his head against the wall because it felt so good when he stopped. That's similar to this world. It's going to feel awfully good when this world is all over. So as long as we're here, we keep on doing what we need to do. We don't give up. Our values determine our evaluations. If we value comfort more than character, then troubles are always going to upset us. If we value the material more than the spiritual, we're not going to be able to count it all joy. If we live only for the present and forget the future, then trials will make us bitter, not better. If you can't rejoice in your trials, your values are just flat wrong. Pressed out of measure and pressed to all length, pressed so intensely it seems beyond strength, pressed in the body and pressed in the soul, pressed in the mind till the dark surges roll, pressure by foes and pressure by friends, pressure on pressure till life nearly ends. Pressed into loving the staff and the rod. Pressed into knowing no helper but God. Pressed into liberty where nothing clings. Pressed into faith for impossible things. Pressed into living a life in the Lord. Pressed into living a Christ life outpoured. Hast thou no scar? No hidden scar on foot or side or hand. I hear thee sung as mighty in the land. I hear them hail thy bright ascendant star. Hast thou no scar? Hast thou no wound? Yet I was wounded by the archers, spent, leaned me against a tree to die, and rent by ravening beasts that compassed me, I swooned. Hast thou no wound? No wound, no scar. Yet as the master shall the servant be, and pierced are the feet that follow me, but thine are whole. Can he have followed far who has no wound or scar? The joy and privilege of bearing in our bodies the marks of the Lord Jesus, enduring trials unto maturity, and maintaining a joyous attitude is the principal point here in this passage in the first chapter of James. Maintaining a joyous attitude that's absolutely contrary to our normal response, which is like the man on the subway, "Why me? Why this? Why now?" The second thing that James uses to amplify this point, in addition to a joyous attitude, is an understanding mind in verse 3. The very first idea there is knowing in verse 3. Knowing this. Knowing this. When you know something, that is cognitive. It speaks of the mind. Know that what's going on in your trials is producing something beneficial. Know that even while you're going through it. Know that you're being tested. The verification of true faith is a wonderful thing. Don't ever think your trials don't accomplish something. Know that they do. The test is not for your bad, it's for your good. The swimming instructor doesn't put the child in to drown, but he has to put the child in to see the child pass the test. The potter doesn't say, oh, let's see how much heat it can take before it cracks. He says, I hope it doesn't crack. And when he takes it out and admires it, he approves it. He's glad that it didn't crack in the test of the furnace. But it had to go through the furnace. David said, many are the afflictions of the righteous. I quoted that earlier, but I didn't quote the last part of it. But the Lord delivers, he says. When the furnace cools down and the potter lifts that vessel out, it's approved. David actually came to look at King Saul as a tool to teach him what he needed to know. Trials are tools to teach us endurance, give us staying power, teach us perseverance, the tenacity of spirit that holds on under pressure. And every time you successfully pass through a trial, you're strengthened. You've gained a little more endurance. Each victory will help you some other to win. James says, know that. Know that and don't forget it. David put it this way in Psalm 40, verse 1. I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined unto me. He heard my cry. He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of a miry clay. He set my feet on a rock and established my goings and put a new song in my mouth. Isn't that the way you feel when you've come through? Stronger than ever because of the enduring of that trial. 1 Corinthians 10:13 is very famous. There's no trial that has taken us, but which such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above that which you are able. Does everybody here have the same ability to endure trials? No, not yet. A brand new baby Christian won't have the same level that some of us should have. But God will never allow you individually to face a trial that you cannot handle. Somebody said, God must think I'm an awful lot stronger than I think I am. That may be, but God knows better than you do. And remember that the more difficult the battle is, the sweeter the victory is. In the 11th chapter of the Hebrew letter, we read that by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. Why? Why did he do that? Because he had respect unto the recompense of reward. Meaning that Moses had an understanding mind. He knew the same thing that James is trying to get us to know. Moses knew that enduring the afflictions would bring something good in the future. So he endured the wrath of the king because by faith he saw an invisible king. By faith, we have an understanding mind. And a third thing is important too in verse 4, a submissive will. First is a joyous attitude. Second is an understanding mind. But third is the submissive will. First word here in verse 4, second word in my King James Bible, is let. Let. Patience have her perfect work. Let endurance do what God wants it to do. Here's the command demanding submission. The only way out of a trial is through it. There are no exits in the side directions. The way out is through. So the psalmist said in Psalm 131, surely I have behaved and quieted myself like a child that is weaned of his mother. My soul is even as a weaned child. What I've been through has made me grow. I've matured. I'm off the bottle now. Maturity is the goal. Let endurance lead to that. The word for perfect was used in secular sources of animals who were finally full grown. Here it's used for Christians who are full grown. Philippians 3:15. Let us therefore, as many as be mature. This shows that maturity is possible for Christians. It was possible in the first century, and it's possible in the 21st. It is attainable. You can get there. The Lord is trying to bring us there. Perfect carries the idea of a richness of character, a real maturity. And it also conveys the idea of a balance, a stable, balanced righteousness. That you may be perfect and entire. The word for entire is the word from which we get our word for holography. Holography is the idea of a 360-degree picture. with all portions intact, fully complete, lacking nothing, perfect and entire, mature in Christ. The God of all grace, after you have suffered a while, will make you perfect. In the 48th chapter of the book of Jeremiah, we see that Moab hath been at ease from his youth. His life has been a bowl of cherries, and he's never developed anything beyond immaturity. A life without problems produces a very weak character. As we go through trials, we are stripped of our worldly dependencies and we're drawn to God. And we are shown the character of our faith as we're perfected to Christ-likeness. Sailors used to say that crosswinds are best for entering a harbor, because it's very difficult to enter a harbor into a headwind, and you try to enter with a tailwind, you can wind 40 feet up on the beach. So the crosswinds are best. You and I are like good metal. The more we're fired, the more we are refined. The more we are opposed, the more we are approved. Wrongs may try us and wrongs may touch us, but they cannot imprint upon us any false stamp. Trials cannot destroy our faith. They do test it, though. Sufferings are like little chips off the cross of Christ. I will not doubt, though all my ships at sea come drifting home with broken masts and sails. I shall believe the hand which never fails from seeming evil worketh good to me. And though I weep because those sails are battered, still will I cry while my best hopes lie shattered. I trust in Thee. I will not doubt, though all my prayers return unanswered from the still white realm above. I shall believe it is an all-wise love which has refused those things for which I yearn. And though at times I cannot keep from grieving, yet the pure ardor of my fixed believing undimmed shall burn. I will not doubt, though sorrows fall like rain and troubles seem like bees around a hive. I shall believe the heights for which I strive are only reached by anguish and by pain. And though I groan and tremble with my crosses, yet shall I see through my severest losses the greater gain. I will not doubt, well anchored in the faith, like some staunch ship, my soul braves every gale. So strong its courage that it will not fail to breast the mighty unknown sea of death. Oh, may I cry when body parts from spirit, I do not doubt, so listening worlds may hear it with my last breath. That's the way to face life, and that's the way to face death, unwaveringly. So let us accept the trials that produce Christ-likeness, that reveal the true state of our faith. The trials that humble us and wean us from the world. The trials that call us to eternal hope and teach us what we really love and teach us how to help others and chasten us into purity. Let's thank God for such trials and count it all joy and understand and submit, confident that no trial comes to us that we can't bear. Remember this, the worth of a soldier is never known in times of peace.